blast went off shortly after 10 a.m. local time in Sultanahmet, which is the heart of Istanbul's old town.
I am President of the United States. I will repeal and replace Obamacare before it repeals and replaces any more jobs.
And for the 16th time ever, and for the fourth time in 7 years, the Alabama Crimson Tide is the champion of college football.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10, and it is January 12th, 2016, and welcome to the show. We've got a lot to talk about today. Lots going on in the world, as you just heard. Potential terrorist attack in Turkey that we're monitoring. We'll see how that affects markets overseas and here in the United States. That story is still developing. They're still trying to put pieces together. Also, today is the day that the president delivers his seventh and final State of the Union address. You might see that on social media with the hashtag SOTU, State of the Union. And so you can follow all day long with what people are talking about. His speech comes tonight. Again, the seventh and final speech for President Obama, his State of the Union address. This morning on Wall Street, or on the world markets, the situation in China continued to seesaw as worries linger over the country's financial markets and economic outlook, fueling volatility in other Asian benchmarks as well. Worry about Beijing's ability to manage its financial markets, coupled with deepening fears about a protracted downturn in the world's number two economy, are keeping investors on edge, and there were sharp losses overnight. On Wall Street yesterday, two of the big three U.S. benchmarks finished slightly higher after mounting last-minute comeback, thanks in part to a couple of tech stocks. Apple, one of them, snapping a three-day losing streak. The Dow added just a fraction of a percent to close at 16,398.57, while the S&P 500 rose again just a fraction of a percent to 1,923. The Nasdaq fell to 46.37. Benchmark crude oil fell to $31 a barrel. The dollar edged lower against the yen and the euro. There is a concerning story developing this morning where oil is concerned. Crude oil prices, as I told you, plunged on the markets on Monday. And there is a word today, MarketWatch reporting that some of the big oil companies may actually be considering filing for bankruptcy. That's right, I said bankruptcy. So after seeing record profits and making a lot of money in the past decade over high oil prices, high gas prices, we were paying high gas prices, they were making money, there is now some indication that maybe some of these companies might file for bankruptcy. Morgan Stanley issued a report this week describing an environment worse than 1986 for energy prices and producers, referring to the last big oil bust that lasted for years. The current downturn is now deeper and longer than each of the five oil price crashes since 1970, and that is very concerning. We'll see how that affects the markets. Also, later on this morning, commodities, copper slipped yesterday. The nickel declined more than 1%. West Texas oil again slid to $31.04 a barrel. This is The Opening Bell on WGN 720. Are you looking for a new job in 2016? Let's go to London. And I think I can still say good morning to Alistair Dryburgh. Good morning, Alistair. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thanks.
It's still morning there. You have about an hour till lunchtime, right?
Yes, that's right.
So we're going to talk. Yeah, we're going to talk to you in our next segment about finding a job. Give us a little teaser, if you will.
Well, I don't speak about finding a job as a career counselor. I see it from the point of view of a specialist in corporate failure, because that's what I was. I was a turnaround specialist. I was the guy they called when the guy they had had been found wanting and had been fired. So I know quite a lot about what goes wrong in jobs. And the basic message I'm going to give you is the biggest single cause of failure in jobs is actually success.
How about that? How about that for a tease? That's coming up in our next segment on The Opening Bell. Don't go away. Dow futures right now are higher 125 points. The S&P futures are up 15. Asian markets overnight, all of the big markets, with the exception of the Shanghai, lower. The Nikkei off 479. Now for traffic at 5:15. Here's Mary Vandeveld
on 720 WGN.
It's 5:17.
ABC News, Wall Street Now. U.S. investors snapped their three-day losing streak on Monday. At least the Dow and the S&P 500 were a little higher. The Nasdaq lost a fraction to 46.38. Looking ahead, things could get dicey. Europe's RBS, one of the world's top banks, has warned its clients of a cataclysmic year, its words, and gently suggested that those clients sell everything except high-quality bonds. RBS analysts believe that major stock markets could lose 20% of their value, that oil may plummet to $16 a barrel in 2016. The Labor Department releases its job openings and labor turnover survey for November later this morning. In October, an overall pickup in hiring and slight uptick in people quitting indicated the job market was slowly improving. And a jury is in place to hear the civil trial related to hundreds of claims remaining against General Motors over its faulty ignition switches. The trial in New York focuses on an Oklahoma crash that injured a driver. Opening statements this morning. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
5:18, this is the opening bell. Welcome back. And we want to continue our discussion, conversation with Alistair Dryburgh. And he is with Forbes in London. And before our break, you said you sort of are an expert in corporate failure, and that's really not something you think people would brag about, but it really is a good selling point because you kind of know where the bodies are buried, don't you?
Well, that's right. I spend a lot of time sorting out messes which have been created for various reasons, and one of the big reasons, in fact, is people who've been in their jobs for too long. Which is why I think this is an appropriate time of year to think, am I still in the right place, or is it time for me to be moving on?
How long is too long for somebody to be in a job, do you think?
Well, I mean, it depends on the job, and it depends on what's going on in the company. I mean, I was listening to your news earlier, and you were just reporting that your President Obama is preparing his final State of the Union address. And, of course, you in the U.S. have got a very sensible system. You don't let your presidents stay in office for more than 8 years, no matter how well they're doing. Whereas in the U.K., we've got a different system. So long as they can keep getting elected, we let them stay in office, basically, until they go mad.
Yeah, or drive you mad, right?
Years. Sorry?
Or yeah, drive or you mad, yeah. Mad.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, Mrs. Thatcher was in office for 11 years, completely crazy by the end of it. Could have left after 8 and left a great legacy, left a very divided legacy. Later on, Tony Blair, same thing. Could have left earlier, looking great. In the end, discredited himself. So I think if 8 years is long enough for the job of a president of the US, and more than that is clearly wrong for the Prime Minister of the UK, I would seriously wonder whether if you've been in the same job for more than, say, 6 or 7 years, you're still in a position to give it what it needs. And you could, in fact, be becoming vulnerable.
You know, our Congress here, though, gets to stay as long as they want. And, we have our branches of government here that sort of bounce off each other. And there are a lot of people who say it might be time for term limits in those areas. And you can sort of relate this to the corporate world, can't you? I mean, if you have a CEO that's been there too long, you talked about the president, but also your rank and file employees, let's say the vice president of a company or the management of human resources, or just go down the line, and that would be sort of like Congress, wouldn't it? I mean, don't they have some input, and don't they have some hand in the messy pot when it gets messy?
I think they do, yes. I think that one of the things is, it's the way we're wired, really, psychologically. We have an idea of our performance in the job. We start off and it's new and it's exciting, probably a bit disorienting. And then we move into a second phase when we feel, yes, I'm getting this now. I'm getting to grips with it and starting to perform. And then we acquire mastery. And we sort of assume that after that, everything's just going to continue as it is for as long as we want it to. But what we usually miss is that things are constantly moving, and if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards, and you reach this phase of mastery. You think, right, great, I'm really on top of this job now, and it's so easy then to miss that the world is changing around you. And that's why I said at the beginning, you know, the biggest cause of failure is actually success. It's people who've had success doing something, and they have become convinced that that is what will always give them success. And
yeah.
So they carry on doing the same old thing, even when it's quite clearly not working. And then all of a sudden, they meet the person they least want to meet, who is me. And in my corporate turnaround days, if you met me, that was bad news, because it means I was there to replace you.
Right. The cynical in me says that some of these folks that you might be talking about stay because they know that when you come in and fire them, they're going to get a pretty big golden parachute in many cases. They're going to get a nice little exit package. Is that a motivation, do you think, for people to stay around and keep doing a bad job?
Not in most cases. I think some people are that cynical. But remember, we're talking about people at all levels. So we're not just talking about the CEO with the eighth or even the nine-figure golden parachute. We're talking about people at other levels of the organization as well. And it often comes as a surprise to them that they are the only people who are surprised.
What advice? So let's go down the rank and file then. Let's say you're just a guy like me who's out looking for a new job, and maybe you on the other side of the fence have just come in and cleaned out management. What are you looking for in people when you hire them? What's the number one thing?
I'm dealing with situations which are either high growth or they are turnarounds, which means in a few years' time, things need to be very different one way or the other. So what I'm looking for, I'm obviously looking for a set of technical skills. So if I'm looking for a financial person, they need to have financial skills. I'm looking for a marketing person, they need to know how to do marketing. But if I'm building an organization for the long term, what I'm looking for is someone who's got the ability to argue with their own success. Someone who can actually, at some critical point, turn around and say, okay, yeah, I've been doing this. I was really great at this. But I'm not going to do it anymore because that's not what the organization needs anymore. So it's almost like someone who is very, very good, very, very competent, but they've got to be able at some point to go back to being almost a beginner again because the world will change, the demands on them will change, and they will need to adapt. So someone who's got a history of doing that, that's very appealing. Someone who comes in and says, yeah, I did this job for some big blue chip name that everyone's heard of, General Electric, whoever. You know, I did this job and therefore I know how to do it. That's going to be a little bit suspect. Because you may be great for that job today. 3 years' time, you're going to have to be doing it differently.
You write in your article that the other part of this sort of is the uncertainty over the future. And this week and last week, we've seen a lot of that with the markets, the worst start to the year for Wall Street and China just going berserk. How is it that, what kind of strategies do you have for managers who you're maybe not going to replace to deal with that uncertainty?
I think, first of all, this may seem a bit strange. First of all, I think you've got to remind them that this uncertainty actually exists. Because a lot of organizations are very focused on creating order and predictability inside the organization, even when things are going wild outside. And sometimes you do actually need to remind people that, hey, you know, this stuff you read on the news, it does actually affect you. And so I think that's the first thing. And beyond that, I think it's just it's the adaptability I was talking about anyway. Maybe it's actually the willingness to say, look, guys, we don't, you know, something has changed here. What are we going to do about it? We don't need to pretend we've got all the answers on day one. Let's accept if there are big changes going on outside, there are going to be some big changes going on inside. And we're going to have to change and we'll be doing new things. And some of those new things, we won't do them all that well when we start. So we've got to accept that, you know, in a smooth economy, things run very, very neatly, very, very efficiently, very, very predictably. And we've got to be comfortable with the fact that in turbulent times, they won't. We'll have some false starts, we'll go down some dead ends, but we'll recover from that and we'll make progress.
You know, as we wrap up here, it strikes me that we have, if I could maybe use the entertainment world as a good example of this, when you have a really good show on television, and I'll take Seinfeld, for instance, here in the United States, or, you know, pick another really good television show where the cast has said, you know, we're done. We're stopping right here because we're successful, even though they had the highest ratings. Do the people that do that in the corporate world, do they move on to success in their next? Do they get to continue enjoying success?
Yes, they do, because in fact, if you want to move on to something bigger and better, the best time to do it is while you're still really successful where you are. So as soon as you start to feel like, great, I've really got the hang of this job, I'm doing really well, that is the time to be looking for the next thing, because you've got a great story to tell, you're full of confidence, you can go out there and you'll do really well. If you wait for the inevitable to happen and you start to decline and you start to lose it a bit, then you're going out there and you're talking to people about what you've done in the last 6 months. It's not so impressive, and you don't have the confidence that comes from really being, you know, on top of your game, then it's actually going to be harder for you to get the next thing. So you need a bit of momentum. As you're approaching the peak, that's the time to be moving on, not wait until you've got there or even after you're going down the other side.
Alistair Dreiber, thank you for being with us from London today, contributor at Forbes magazine online. I'll link you to an article if you follow us on Twitter. And by the way, you can follow Alistair on Twitter at ACDDRYBURGH. I think I got it right. And I'll tweet that out at Steve Grzanich on Twitter as well, and we'll link you to the article that Alistair wrote. Alistair, good of you to be with us on the opening bell, and have a good new year.
Thank you for the invitation.
All right, thanks. Hopefully we can chat again. It's 529 on the opening bell, and we'll take a break. Be back with news in just a minute.
Lottery officials say about 75% of all potential combinations were purchased before Saturday's drawing, and the expectation is that about 80% will be covered by Wednesday.
Probably the most touristic part of Istanbul, potentially even Turkey itself, and it was a very large blast. It was heard across the city.
The president is expected to continue to refine his speech throughout the day today, according to White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
The president typically is working on this on the State of the Union, you know, pretty close to the up to the last minute.
Just some of what's going on around the world this morning. Plenty to talk about. We'll be monitoring all morning long here at WGN, here on the opening bell, then on the Steve Cochran Show, with news at the top and the bottom of the hour as we move through the morning. American farmers and ranchers have been attending the American Farm Bureau's 97th annual convention in Orlando, and their longtime leader is ending his run after 16 years. American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman told members this week that they need to adopt technology and they need to stand up for their rights. In his opening address to the convention, Stallman says as long as farmers stand together, they'll be a force to ensure agricultural strength and security.
Farm Bureau and agriculture have had our challenges. In fact, we were created to help members access better seeds, information, and the support of their fellow farmers and ranchers. Today, of course, we still face challenges, both old and new, plummeting crop prices, whatever Mother Nature is throwing at us, and reams of government regulations. Generations of farmers and ranchers have survived bad markets and bad weather, but bad government should not be the straw that breaks us.
He went on to say that farmers need to share their stories with the world on social media and elsewhere, and he also says they need to encourage younger generations. The Farm Bureau has also been focusing on veterans and encouraging veterans to become farmers. Here's more of Stallman's outgoing address.
If we're going to let the federal government dictate where we can and cannot farm, or cut trees, or build homes, or otherwise use the land for any productive economic activity, then this is not the land of liberty. It is not the country that our forefathers envisioned, nor is it a country that will be able to feed itself for very long. But I believe that Farm Bureau can and will continue to defend our ability to work the land for future generations.
He spoke specifically about the organization's struggle to overturn the Environmental Protection Agency's latest, in his opinion and farmers' opinion, flawed water policies. That WET Act has been getting so much attention. 16 years as president, and one of his last acts was to be on stage with the representative of that area, Tom Vilsack, who has been a friend of farmers throughout the country. But he still took some tough questions. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack now at the American Farm Bureau says that farmers need to start thinking more globally.
I think it's fair to say that without Farm Bureau's advocacy and aggressive efforts, we would not have had the 2014 Farm Bill. And certainly we have benefited, I think, from having a Farm Bill, whether it's the disaster payments that have been made to producers, or the ARC and PLC payments that nearly totaled $5 billion to about 1.7 million farmers. Recognize that there's still some challenges, and I'm sure I'm going to hear about those today. And we still have work to do, but without Bob's involvement, without Farm Bureau's involvement, we wouldn't have had that Farm Bill. And we certainly wouldn't be as far along in the trade discussion as we are.
Vilsack went on to say that the United States is great because we have great farmers. And he says the average American doesn't worry about where their food comes from because of the hard work that farmers and ranchers do every day. There is a lot of activity at the American Farm Bureau Convention. Orion Samuelson is there, and he'll be reporting on some of what's going on there. One of the big discussions is a discussion of the new rules on drones, because believe it or not, and you may not know this, but farmers have been using drones for years, and in some cases they've actually taken the place of crop dusters. But mainly, they use those drones to fly over their many, many acres to see where there might be problem spots. And now they have another hurdle to go through in terms of getting perhaps even a pilot's license if the drone is big enough. But that's one of the technologies that's being embraced by farmers is the UAV, the unmanned aerial vehicles, and the drones. And there are some new ones on display there. If you get a chance to go to the website, the American Farm Bureau website, they have some of those display videos there. But some cool stuff. Some new farm technology coming out. But again, the big story at the Farm Bureau Convention is the fight against the Environmental Protection Agency's latest rules and regulations in terms of rainwater and other sorts of chemicals and things that are on farms these days. They'll pick a new president, and hopefully we'll tell you who that is later today with the noon show, or maybe tomorrow if they've done it by then. It is 5:43. This is the opening bell on WGN 720. We want to bring in Mary Vandeveld. Mary, the morning is very cold. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
How would you like to play ball with your dog at 3 o'clock in the morning in the yard?
Is that what you were doing?
I had to chase him around the yard, yeah.
Oh, man. Does he like the cold?
You know, I thought he would be the most affected by my schedule, my new schedule.
Yeah.
But I actually had to drag him inside this morning.
That's unusual because I thought dogs just would go out there and come right back in. I know a couple dogs. My grand dogs, for example, hate the cold, so they'll just come right back.
Dave Bennett is here. He was telling me, too, that his dog just goes, you've got a routine with your dog.
He's used to my schedule. Mm-hmm. So when he sleeps at the foot of our bed, when I leave to go downstairs in the morning, he follows me down the stairs. I let him out. He comes back in while I'm making my coffee. He's out in the yard, comes back in. I toss him a cookie. He says, see ya. And that's it. And then he goes back to bed, I think. I don't know. Maybe he's having a party. I'm not sure what's happening.
So you don't crate your dog when you're not?
No.
Ready?
No.
Yeah. See, my dog is a Labrador Retriever. He's 8 years old, and I have to crate him because he would just do what dogs do.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he doesn't go back to bed. He actually brings, I'll step out of the shower, and he'll be there with the ball in his mouth and drop it.
Let's go, Dad.
Let's go. Let's go. But it's too cold, and Mary, the roads in some places are still slippery this morning.
Yeah, I've noticed some slippery roads. Some of the secondary roads when I was coming in anyway haven't even been plowed yet, so I imagine within the next couple hours everything will be pretty much plowed and cleared up. But there's still going to be some icy conditions, especially if you're heading out on the sidewalk, so just be careful. A couple of rollover problems. First off, inbound Eisenhower and Accident Central. It's a semi-rollover. Two left lanes are blocked with that. It's already backed up from Harlem, and it's up to 40 minutes in from 53. 25 for Mannheim. Still have that rollover FedEx truck. It's on the northbound tri-state on the ramp to eastbound 290. Two left lanes are blocked with that. And I-94 eastbound near the Indiana Toll Road accident, two left lanes. Traffic sponsored by TGI Fridays, the 474 at TGI Fridays. App starting at $4, entrees at $7, desserts for just $4 at participating restaurants. Prices apply to just right portions only. Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
And coming up on the opening bell here on WGN 720, the startup that's betting on PCs making a comeback right after this.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the opening bell. The markets overseas tonight. Let's give you an update on what's happening there. First of all, in Asia, the Nikkei off 479 points. The Asia Dow down 30. The Hang Seng off 177 overnight. Shanghai up 6. The Sensex off 143. In Singapore, index down 17 points. In Europe, the FTSE is up 91 points. The DAX is down up 237. All of the other European indices are in positive territory this morning. The Dow futures up 97 points, indicating an open that'll be higher on Wall Street, 16,388. And the S&P 500 futures up 13 points this morning, again, indicating an opening that will be in positive territory on the Dow. The opening bell continues now on WGN, and we want to bring in our next guest, Matthew McFarland of the Washington Post, who's very good to be with us bright and early this morning. And Matthew's been writing about a startup company, that is betting that PCs are going to make a big comeback. And Matthew, they have a potential market base of billions of people around the world.
Right. Yeah, that's what they say. They see a huge opportunity. We've seen smartphones and do really well globally, but PCs have plateaued a bit. But according to the research that Endless has done, they feel that hey, we've got just billions of people here that we can connect with PCs.
Well, let's tell people about this PC real briefly, because this company, Emmis, this is not a normal PC that they have. I mean, one of the selling points I think they have about it is that it has information on it that people will be able to access without accessing the internet. So, for instance, there are saved pages from internet sites that are on there. It's a small sort of, almost looks like one of the old Apple computers. And so they're thinking of like third world and places, underdeveloped places in the world, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, they're targeting the developing nations. And what they really want to help on is the connectivity issue that, maybe someone can't always have internet connectivity. Then maybe they don't always have access to, Wikipedia or these other assets. So the idea is that it comes preloaded with about 650 megabytes of content, and this content will update itself if the computer is ever connected to the internet. But if a user can't get onto the internet, they can just enjoy and read some articles. And the team has really picked out articles that it thinks would be especially useful to people. A lot of things dealing with, educational stuff and health information.
Well, one of the drawbacks that I see to this is that it doesn't come with a monitor, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, there's no monitor or a keyboard or mouse, so that's an extra expense on top of the $79 PC that a person would have to buy.
You said it there, $79. So you could really afford to get, a cheap monitor for this. Who do you think is their target audience when we say underdeveloped parts of the world and places where connectivity's not so hot? Who are they saying is going to be their target audience?
So they're starting in Guatemala. They've actually arranged financing there where people can get the computer and just pay $3 a month for it. After Guatemala, they want to move into Mexico. They also are interested in China, which is a big opportunity. So, yeah, it starts in Guatemala and really just goes from there.
You've been reporting on this. Do you get a sense that there are others in the tech world who are watching very closely what this company is doing?
So I haven't really seen that, but if they get traction, I think other people will, you know, potentially follow in their footsteps. But right now, more of the energy has been pushing towards, you know, the smartphone system.
And when you say you mean the energy of the other players in the tech market.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We've kind of seen so much of a shift from making, you know, traditional PCs and whatnot into more in smartphones where there's just so much growth. So that's what's interesting about these guys is that they found from their research, they say that, hey, there's great demand and great interest in PCs, and they think that they have this really big opportunity. So now we get to see, can they pull it off? Can this really happen?
And we were discussing this yesterday after we read your article, and you know, we all sort of looked at each other and said, what are they smoking? I mean, you go out and everybody does have these tablets, and that's what, I mean, even in some of these underdeveloped countries where, you know, I think of like some of the war-torn countries in the Middle East where there are bombs falling every day. Everybody has a mobile device, it seems. So, mm-hmm. You know, it begs the question how this is going to play out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they pretty much argue that, hey, there are just things you can do on a PC that you can't do on a smartphone, that, you know, hey, having a little bit more screen space is really nice. So, you know, they say they've done a lot of research and talked to a lot of people and got just a ton of enthusiasm for PCs. And they say that, you know, hey, money was really an issue, that PCs used to be too expensive, but now with this lower price point, they expect that this is going to open up a lot of doors for them around the world.
Here on The Opening Bell, already in our first few shows, we've been talking about startups and innovation and how hard it is to get money. Does the fact that they've actually got a promise of money from at least one part of the world indicate that maybe they're onto something?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely a positive sign that they really seem to have a foothold. So now the question is, yeah, does it really grow? Can they replicate this and do it, you know, elsewhere as well?
Matthew McFarland of the Washington Post at Matt McFarland on Twitter. Good of you to be with us this morning on The Opening Bell, and we'll continue to follow this story because I think, I don't know about you, I think it reminds me a little bit of some of the first Apple computers, doesn't it? Remember those big, the yes. bubble-looking ones?
Oh, yeah, it definitely kind of looks like the iMac with this similar design. It kind of has a nice look, and it's colorful with a mix of kind of the clear white taste on it as well.
Yeah. All right, Matthew McFarland, again, of the Washington Post, at Matt McFarland. Thanks for being with us on The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
This is WGN 720. Quickly, the Dow futures are up 104 points now. The S&P futures up 13, oil trading lower. There are fears in the oil market that some companies may actually be close to bankruptcy. And as you heard earlier in the program, maybe $16 a barrel oil next year. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out next year. We will be back with you tomorrow on The Opening Bell, and later in the week we're going to be talking about something in the airline industry called last class seating. If you thought it was bad now on airlines, just wait till you hear what we found. Again, last class seating. That's on The Opening Bell later this week. The Steve Cochran Show is coming up next. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a nice day, everybody. It's 5:57.